This is an I Am Listening original podcast.
Certainly, everything is in flux. There's more fluidity, volatility in British politics than there have been in about 100 years. And so there is, you know, a huge amount on the table to play for at the moment in these upcoming elections.
Welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast, your go-to source for insightful discussions on local and national political matters. Join us as we take a deep dive into local government across the county. Find out what the key decision makers have to say, what your money is being spent on, and how the party's policies could affect how we live. Plus, don't miss our regular feature, Westminster Watch, where we dissect the latest developments and decisions shaping the political landscape in the heart of the UK's capital. Engage with us as we delve into the issues that matter to you and explore the dynamic world of politics from a Kent perspective.
Welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast. In the week, Council Chiefs came under fire for a heated public meeting. A major local authority-linked contractor went under, and concerns were raised over poor water quality, which had led to a Kent beach being closed for the foreseeable future. I'm Simon Finlay, the local democracy reporter covering Kent County Council, and I'm joined by Robert Boddy, who reports on Medway.
Hello.
And Dan Essen, who reports on the Borough and District Councils.
Hello.
And Nikki White, who's looking after what's been happening at Westminster.
Hello.
And we'll be catching up with the man behind the pollsters, electoral calculus and polling, which got local parties in a tiz for suggesting that Reform could take control of Kent County Council after May the 1st. But first up, Robert, what's been happening in your way?
Well, Medway Council hosts a public Q&A event called Medway Matters Live, and last week an edition was held at the 100 of Who Academy on the Who Peninsula. Council leader Vince Maple and Chief Executive Rich Tix gave presentations about what the Labour administration had done over its first 2 years, what the council was up to at the moment, and what local government reorganisation would mean for Medway. Then it moved on to the Q&A portion, which almost instantly became quite fractious, being described as spiky by one attendee after the fact.
Spiky? What does that mean?
Well, it's the Who Peninsula, and housing is a pretty heated topic there. From the off, we had questions about the lack of infrastructure for the peninsula, but also more broadly, with a couple of audience members saying the Medway Maritime Hospital was dangerous because it was so severely overstretched. Road infrastructure, the fact that there's one road off and one road on the peninsula, was also a major discussion point for the evening. And the removed £170 million housing infrastructure fund came up again and again. The fact these topics came up was not the difficult part in itself, but some of the members of the audience were not happy with some of the responses and weren't afraid to let the panel know.
So apart from the bruising, was it worth it?
They certainly seem to think so. And they would have been very naive to think an event like this on the peninsula, where Labour in particular don't do very well in elections, wouldn't attract some criticism along these lines. However, from where I was sitting, it wasn't a total washout. Although they weren't shouting out in support, there were a fair few people in the audience who seemed to be taking on board some of the answers, so there was some value. At one point, an audience member shouted, show of hands, who wants all house building on the Who Peninsula to stop? Out of around 90 people, about 30 put their hands up, but Councillor Theresa Murray, deputy leader, who was also on the panel, fired back saying, show of hands, who wants their children to be able to afford to buy their own homes and have decent jobs in a well-connected place? And there was a similar showing of hands. Not everyone was cut and dry against development, but most want better measures to improve infrastructure and services to cope. And the Medway Matters Live gave them a chance to make that definitely known.
Dan, what have you been looking at then?
I spent a bit of time looking at Dartford Borough Council's outsourcing arrangements, specifically with reference to council properties and council home maintenance, which have gone slightly awry this week and left quite a lot of council tenants up in the air. Basically, as is norm for the councils, Dartford don't use their own staff for building maintenance, that kind of thing. They have a contractor. In this case, it was one called the Briar Group, one of these massive building firms, which basically exists exclusively through public sector outsourcing. But last week, Dartford Council tenants all got a text saying that all routine maintenance is postponed and only urgent and emergency repairs can be done. Dartford Borough Council said in recent reports that the work of that company had been unsatisfactory for a little while, and that may well have been related to the fact that the company's pretty much been on the ropes for a long time now. Just before I started writing the story, three winding up petitions against it were issued by people who were owed loads of money by the company. And in the process of me writing the story, they officially went into administration.
Okay. And where does that leave Dartford Council and its tenants?
So Dartford Council's contract with Briar was officially brought to a premature end pretty much right before the company was officially put into administration. And council found alternative contractors who are carrying out all the essential works. But I would assume, given the urgency, that those contractors aren't coming particularly cheap. And presumably the council's now going to have to spend a load of time and money finding somebody else to take over the maintenance full time.
So Simon, what have you been working on this week?
Well, Rob, a bit like you, I went to a public meeting on Monday night, and it was the first election hustings of this campaign for the elections at Kent County Council. And it was in the Maison Rural North Division when it was organised by the Bearsted Climate Action Network and was held at the local church, the Holy Cross Church in Bearsted. Taking part were Stephen Thompson from the Green Party, Clive English for the Dems, Paul Carter for the Tories, and Sean Turner from the Heritage Party, Reform and Labour candidates were invited, but they didn't go for whatever reason. But there was quite a moderate turnout, a bit unlike the spiky encounter that you went to. Quite moderate, if I'm honest, but there was a good level of debate.
And what was under discussion?
Well, the big mix of topics, from potholes to mental health treatment for the young. There was the debate about the state of local democracy and a bit about the environment and climate change and that sort of thing. These events don't tend to yield too much for the journalists necessarily, but what they can do and what you learn from it is a bit about the public feeling and the sort of issues that they want to discuss. And Stephen Thompson, Clive English and Paul Carter are all serving and elected councillors already, but the only unelected person on the panel was Sean Turner. But Paul did say in his opening remarks, he said he let one that slipped one small nugget that he'd never actually taken part in hustings before. But maybe that's got something to do with the fact that a little bird tells me that there are some concerns in the Maidstone Rural North Division, which he currently holds, that his seat might not be as safe as people think. But there may be many divisions around Kent where, like that one, the whole complexion of the area has changed because of mass house building in the county, and maybe that's a factor. Nikki, what have you been up to?
Well, the sun's been out, and I don't know about you, but I'm thinking of warmer days ahead and trips to the seaside. Now, for many of us, that will include a dip in the sea, but when you do take the plunge, you want to know the water you're getting into is safe, and you can do that by checking the Environment Agency's website, which will tell you which beaches it deems suitable to swim in and the ones it thinks you should avoid. But one MP, he's fuming because he says the blacklisting of a whole beach for months on end due to its no-swim warning just isn't good enough. Tony Vaughan, he represents Folkestone and Hythe. He says a blanket ban by the EA advising people not to swim at Dymchurch is unfairly damaging the area. He wants more testing. He thinks more testing is needed, and it possibly isn't as bad as it is now as the official rating suggests. Now, the problems of Dymchurch began after the EA published the results of its checks on bathing water quality at several beaches across Kent back in November, and Dymchurch was downgraded from sufficient to poor due to increasing levels of bacteria such as E. coli. That's fair enough. But Mr. Vaughan says testing isn't being carried out nearly enough to give an accurate picture. And as a result, it's inevitably going to have an impact on Dymchurch businesses, which rely heavily on tourists popping in for things like food, drink, or any stuff that you might want to take to the beach. And let's face it, if you know one beach is deemed officially safe and another isn't, it's a bit of a no-brainer as to which one you're going to visit.
So how's the testing being carried out?
So the EA's tests are based on an analysis of 20 samples taken over the course of the bathing season, and that runs between May and September. But when Mr. Vaughan visited on Friday, and that's several weeks before the bathing and testing season officially begins, he went with an inventor who's come up with this new device which delivers water testing results within half an hour, and the test that day indicated the pollution levels were low risk. Mr. Vaughan says the EA needs to start testing the water far more often than half the year, but we obviously need more data to do that. So another firm interested in more testing is Southern Water, and recently Mr. Vaughan met up with the firm's chief exec, Lawrence Gosden. One of the ideas that came up out of that was citizen testing, and that suggestion is being looked at in more detail to see if it could work. In a statement, the EA said, while overall bathing water quality has improved in recent decades, the poor results for Dymchurch show there is still much work to do, and specialist officers are working with Southern Water and Folkestone and Hythe Council to find ways to improve the water quality along the coast. Dover and Deal MP Mike Tapp, he's also been raising the issue of water quality in the past week, and he met with Environment Minister Steve Reid on the beach at Deal to find out what the government is doing to tackle pollution in our sea. They chatted to business owners and locals to hear their views, and they talked about how the government has banned the multi-million pound bonuses that water bosses were getting, how it's taking legal action when it's needed, and has secured more than £104 billion of private sector investment in our waterways. So the good news is that most of our beaches in Kent are deemed safe, so grab your cozzy, Simon.
I think I will indeed.
Is there a topic that you would like to be discussed on the Kent Politics Podcast? Perhaps you've got a question for one of our panel, or you'd like to comment on a hot topic in local or national government. Get in touch by emailing or sending a voice note to kentpoliticspodcast@thekmgroup.co.uk.
Recent polling by Electoral Calculus suggests that Reform UK will take more seats in the coming county council elections than any other political party, and it will be the Conservatives who will take a pounding. But the poll also found that Reform could well be in charge of Kent County Council after May the 1st. Now, Electoral Calculus' founder and its CEO, Martin Baxter, joins us. Welcome to the show.
Hello there, Simon.
How are you doing? I'm joined today by Dan Essen, who covers the district and borough councils, and he will be asking some questions about this as well. First of all, the KCC result, according to this polling, would have Reform on 41 seats, which is the number needed to have a majority, followed then by the Conservatives on about 25, and then the Labour Party, the Greens, and the Lib Dems will get sort of a smallish number each, the biggest of which would be the Lib Dems. Tell us about how the poll actually is conducted.
Sure. So this was a poll we did towards the end of March, where we spoke to 5,000 people, so a relatively large sample, but across the whole country, asking them how they intended to vote in the local elections. And we used this slightly fancy method called MRP to work out from the poll how people are likely to vote in each area and indeed in each electoral division in Kent and elsewhere. So we're trying our best, but a poll is just a poll. So it's only a snapshot and it's an estimate, but it does show very interesting results for Kent because we've got Reform and the Conservatives almost neck and neck in terms of vote share, which of course is a big, big change from where it was 4 years ago when these seats were last contested in 2021, when we were just coming out of COVID. The Conservatives were still very popular and the then Brexit Party wasn't even standing, I think, in many seats. But how things have changed in 4 years. So Reform are now riding fairly high in the Westminster polling, and they are also doing quite well in the polling that we did. And so we think that Reform are likely to take quite a lot of seats from the Conservatives across the country, but also in Kent in the elections on the 1st of May.
Can you just explain for the benefit of the listener what MRP actually stands for and how it works?
Okay, well, it stands for, get ready for this, Simon, it stands for multivariate regression and post-stratification, which is...
It sounds painful.
It's a whole academic mouthful. Mm. What it really means is, I don't know if you remember at school ever fitting a best straight line graph through a cloud of data points. It's like doing that, but with people, that we try and work out, we regress, it's the key word, the R, how people's voting intention varies with other characteristics about them, you know, their age and their gender, their education level, and so on. Mm. So in the big sample, we get a lot of information about people's voting intention, but also their other characteristics. We find the link between the characteristics and voting intention, and then we apply that, say, to each electoral division in Kent, because we know how many people in each electoral division there are of a particular age, particular education level, and so on. So that's how it works. So it normally works maybe slightly more accurately than kind of classic conventional polling, and it does give us the geographical detail. But equally, it's not a complete golden bullet, because if people don't speak to pollsters or they change their minds later, then obviously the results can be different.
Yeah, okay. But sort of, what sort of sample size would there be in a county size account?
The trick with MRP is that the sample size is a national sample of over 5,000. And so although within that Kent will only be a few hundred people, there are people who live outside Kent who are like people in Kent. And the trick with the MRP method is that we use people who are similar to Kentish people to help imply how people in Kent are going to vote.
Okay. Well, I mean, according to this data, Derbyshire, Doncaster, Durham, Kent, Suffolk, Thurrock would all go to Reform.
Indeed, yes. Reform, there's kind of two things to say. Firstly, that Reform are in the lead. On the other hand, they're only a little bit in the lead, and it's a three-party contest, and frankly, none of them are very popular. The Conservatives are still unpopular after having been in government for 14 years. The Labour Party are now relatively unpopular, having been in government just for less than a year. Reform are as popular as the other two, but maybe because they haven't been in government yet. Mm. But it is a three-horse race, but none of them are terribly preferred by the people overall. There's no one sort of kind of clear winner at the moment, but Reform are the people to beat, I'd say, at the moment. And so they are predicted to win some seats across the country, many seats, and also some councils, but it is close. So in the end, I was just looking at the figures. There's only about a couple of points in it between the predicted Reform vote share and the Conservative vote.
Yeah, they got a similar vote share, but there's a chasm between the amount of actual seats they get. There'd be, you know, reform, according to this, would get 16 more seats than the Conservatives. I mean, that's right,
but sorry, I just jump in there. Mm. Equally, that could change with very small movements in opinion. We get this at the county level and the Westminster level as well, but because the situation is so febrile, if I can use that word, a little bit of change of how people are planning to vote can make a big difference in seats. So that if, say, there was a swing of a few percent from reform back to the Conservatives could win Kent. So it's very close. We're showing you how it is at the moment, that there are lots of possibilities, and if it comes out a little bit different from how we think, it could make a big difference in terms of seats.
There's very few political leaders in Kent, particularly the Conservatives and the Labour Party, agree with any of this polling. I mean, how do you react to that? They say it's inaccurate, essentially.
Well, I suppose we'll all see how accurate it is on the 1st of May after votes are counted. But all I can say is that we've been using MRP for many years, that it normally does fairly well, and that this polling reflects polling by other pollsters. You don't have to believe us, that shows that reform are doing well nationally. We're just applying that to individual counties and divisions. So the news is never welcome to parties who are declining. And they will always cavil and try and pick holes in anything that says they're not doing so well. We will have to see. But reform, according to all the polls, are doing quite well at the moment.
So it's pretty well known that in local elections, you know, turnout tends to hover between 30 and 40%. I'm guessing that must factor into your calculations. But I'm wondering, are you predicting any particular change in turnout, any sort of deviation from, you know, what you'd usually expect at a local election? And if so, what's driving that?
Yeah, that's a great question, Dan, because turnout, as you said, is low in local elections. And so the result can depend very much on who gets their supporters to vote and whose supporters tend to stay at home more. So that's really important. The poll very much asked that. It was the first question we asked people, is how likely they thought they were to vote at the upcoming local elections. We found, similar numbers to the ones you were mentioning, that the average for Kent, the average turnout is 36% we're seeing. So we do ask, we'd make an estimate for each division. So people saying Seven Oaks are a little more likely to vote than people in Canterbury for some reason. But we make estimates about turnout and we're trying our best on that, but it certainly is a factor that can sway things on the day. The turnout is a bit more or less than expected, or if there's supporters of one party are more likely to turn out than another, that can make a difference. And smaller candidates as well can baffle the predictions as well. So there are a lot of factors in local elections. It's a slightly mug's game to predict them, but here I am as Mr. Muggins having the go.
Another thing, so you're not expecting much change in turnout from the usual, but you also say you're basically expecting the Labour Party around the country and in Kent not to do very well. Is it, you know, is that after only, you know, less than a year in government, is a massive sort of anti-incumbency swing on a really low turnout? Is that the kind of thing that should worry Labour politicians?
Frankly, yes. Anti-incumbency is sort of the big theme going across many Western countries at the moment. It hit the Conservatives very hard in July, and yeah, it seems to be hitting Labour quite hard, even though that they ought to be enjoying a honeymoon period with the voters, would be the normal thing for a new government. But their poll numbers are not what they would wish. In terms of the county elections, it's slightly more complicated because back in 2021, when they were last held, Labour was very unpopular then under Jeremy Corbyn and with COVID. So that in a way, it's a low base for Labour to come up from. But even still, it's not, you know, it's not the general election highs that they had last year at the moment. But they, you know, if they do well, they might gain some seats relative to 2021. But it doesn't look like it's going to be a standout performance for Labour this year.
Obviously, we're, you know, only less than a year into new sort of national government. Is this the kind of thing that you think might be predictive of future changes in the new local authorities after the, you know, reorganisation of local government? Do you think, you know, is the result of this election going to tell us much about that we don't already know about, you know, the possibilities for the next general election, even though it's at least four years away?
Well, I think the thing to look at will be whether reform genuinely do well or not. That, you know, the polls are saying reform is strong, but equally reform's organisation on the ground is young and maybe not very well developed in many places. So there's a big question of whether reform can really win and win seats and win councils. if they do get actual votes in large numbers on the ground, that will give a big boost to Nigel Farage in his push to get more seats at Westminster. On the other hand, if Reform is a bit of a damp squib and we see the Conservatives or Labour doing better than expected, then that will give them a boost as well. So the parties will all be looking at this, reading the runes to see what can be discerned from the county data, and because this will be the biggest test of real public opinion since the general election last year.
The poll also suggests the Liberal Democrats seem to be net winners, not by sort of stonking margins, but they'll be the largest party in Cambridgeshire, Cornwall, in Gloucestershire, Oxfordshire, Shropshire, where there are May elections, and West Essex, where there are delays because of reorganisation of local authorities. Most of these are at the expense of the Conservatives. So what's going on there? Do you see the Liberal Democrats having a good election?
Yes, that's really a kind of continuation of what we saw the general election last July in those sorts of areas, that the Conservatives were unpopular for a number of reasons. And there in those parts of the country, Conservative support was tending to go to the Liberal Democrats, and the Lib Dems were taking seats, particularly in kind of the south-southwest of England in the rural areas. And because the Liberal Democrats maybe have the advantage of not being in power at a national level, they're not suffering from the incumbency problem. And so they'll be looking to kind of continue the trend that they saw in July at the county level. And that's probably going to happen according to the people we spoke to.
The Green Party in Kent have been growing in strength and popularity for the last few years. They're in charge of two councils and a major foothold in another. Where do the Greens sit in the new sort of disrupted order of things?
Well, that's a very interesting and indeed tricky question, because as you say, the Greens are growing. Growing their council strength across the country in various places, and indeed have got a few seats at Westminster now. Predicting the Greens is slightly tricky because they are quite small and it's difficult to measure, I'll be honest. So our predictions for the Greens are a little bit speculative. We've got, I think, maybe just, is it one Green councillor in Kent? But there could be more. It's hard to predict them until they get a bit bigger. So that will be one to watch, because if you are, say, a relatively left of centre supporter who feels perhaps that the Labour government is not left enough for you, then the Greens are a natural home. Equally, you might be living in a rural area and you're very concerned about the environmental issues and you think the Greens are the best bet for you as well. So the Greens get support from a couple of sorts of different types of people, and they have been growing, and the polling certainly shows that they are increasing in support. But the trouble is, if your support increases, say, from 5% to 10%, you don't necessarily win anywhere. The trick is, as the Lib Dems are the past masters of, is to concentrate your support in some seats and let it go elsewhere and focus on the places you can win and win there. So it would be interesting to see if the Greens can achieve that.
Yeah, well, the Green Party are very good in Kent at sort of like, you know, they have got finite resources, but they have a way of basically identifying a target and really, really going for it. In the Lib Dems, you know, we're past masters of doing that. So, you know, I think that the actual sort of eventual vote might be low, but they might get more seats. So that is a possibility too, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that will be a thing to watch on the night to see whether that happens.
But the MRP polling can't really take that into account. Or is that built into it as well?
We do our best. We try, but it is there's a larger margin of error, let's put it that way, with smaller parties like the Greens and independent candidates who are quite hard to predict exactly where they will be strong. So we do our best, but yeah, a larger margin of error than normal.
Okay, so the Green Party is one to watch then.
There's something else I want to ask. It's more of a broader sort of structural question, but I was reading a while ago the book Ruling the Void by Peter Mayer, and in that he gives statistics on loads of Western European democracies and basically says that since the 90s, loads of countries, Britain and Ireland included, have experienced their most electoral volatility for a century. Basically, the more greater proportion of swing voters collapsing the support base of, you know, the formerly sort of hegemonic two parties and this kind of thing. And it's interesting to see polling from electoral calculus seem to play out that at a local level, the major parties are consistently rocked, depending on circumstances, by whichever party can capture the energy of being perceived as against the system and against the rest of them. Do you think results like this, a local election, and what we could see in Kent with, you know, the two major parties taking a real battering, do you think that speaks to a sort of long-term decline in the, you know, British politics as we know it, essentially, you know, Labour and Tory being the structuring divide of British politics? Do you think these kind of election results show that's no longer the case?
Yes, I mean, it's an absolutely fascinating time in British politics. And I think, the general election, Kent was pretty good bellwether of showing that previously very strong conservative areas could switch many seats to being Labour in the case of the general election. So Kent is only illustrative. What's it illustrative of? It is exactly what you're saying, that all the large established parties are under pressure. And we do have an almost unprecedented three-way situation at the moment, which really has no parallel until you go back as far as about 100 years ago, when the then new Labour Party was beginning to challenge the old Liberal Party and changed the then duopoly of Conservative and Liberal to the new two-way pairing of Conservative and Labour. Reform are challenging again. I guess Reform are trying to eclipse the Conservative Party and make it a Labour Reform two-party system, but they may or may not succeed on that, or, you know, other combinations are possible. It might end up Reform could eclipse Labour and there's a Conservative Reform two-way, which it is in Kent, but whether that would be the case nationally is maybe a bit early to say. But certainly everything is in flux. There's more fluidity, volatility in British politics than there have been in about 100 years. And so there is, you know, a huge amount on the table to play for at the moment in these upcoming elections.
There was an interesting section of the explanation behind the polling that you did with the Daily Telegraph, and it showed that there was the treatment of the don't knows. Tell us why that is so significant.
Well, at the last election, there were quite a lot of people who said that they didn't know how they were going to vote. And it was an interesting question how you treated those in the analysis of the poll. So what we think happened, kind of in retrospect, once the dust settled, is that those people who said that they didn't know or refused to answer the voting intention question were maybe more likely to have stuck with their original all-party support than people who did say. So that there were, you know, at the general election, all pollsters slightly undercounted the Conservative support and slightly overcounted Labour. And potentially, according to our analysis, one cause of that could have been that the people who had voted Conservative before but said don't know or refused to answer were actually still going to vote Conservative. So we're now applying logic like that again for the locals, for people who say don't know. And there was another sort of related feature that some voters, particularly on the centre-left, were that they overestimate their chance to vote. Let me say that in simpler words, that many people think that they're likely to vote at the elections, but they aren't really. So they're being a little bit over optimistic on whether they're actually going to get to the polling booths on the day. We're trying to adjust for that a bit better, but it is still slightly hard because obviously in polling, you very much want to trust people. You ask people a question and you hope that mostly they're going to give you the accurate answer and not sort of mess you about. But on likelihood to vote, is not. I don't think that people are trying to, you know, mislead you or be better than, you know, give you deliberately wrong information. They're just a little bit over-optimistic. They go, oh, yeah, voting locals, yeah, I'll probably do that. But maybe they're not going to.
Yeah. So, tell us a little bit about tactical voting as well, because is that sort of fed into the way you do your polling?
At the general election, yes, we did do a lot of work on tactical voting. At the locals, no, there's too many seats, really. So if people are voting tactically on the ground in a particular electoral division, no, we're not measuring that. So that could be another source of deviation from, you know, the real results being different from the predicted ones.
Martin Baxter, founder of Electoral Calculus, thank you very much indeed for your time today. It's always a pleasure, never a chore.
Thanks, it's a great pleasure to be here.
Thank you. So Robert mentioned earlier that he'd been to a public event involving Medway Council leader and the chief executive, and I was recently at a council hustings as well. But how important is it that political leaders put themselves out there? Is it worth the cost and effort of bearing in mind that not that many people attend? Robert, what do you think of this then?
I think the Medway Matters live events are, there's been three so far, which was introduced by the Labour administration, and they've all been fairly well attended. And I think, although, yes, so obviously the main topic that I talked about there was the fact that it was quite spike and it was quite difficult. And I think the people involved always knew that was going to be the case. But I was speaking to them after the fact. I think they definitely see the value of it in the case of, yeah, there are a lot of difficult things, but it's important to hear what people are annoyed about. Mm. And it wasn't all, not all of the questions were necessarily attacking the council. They were just saying, this is an issue in our area. What are you doing about it? Or we tried to talk to you about this, and just kind of putting a bit of pressure on that way. So I think there is a definite value to these sorts of things. And although a lot of people were quite angry and were willing to sort of shout out. And I mean, at one point during the presentations at the beginning, Vince Maple gave his presentation and said, talked about what the council was up to. And he said, does the council always get everything right? And one member of the audience shouted out, no. There are some people like that who are never going to be happy with what they said. But there were enough people in the audience from where I was sitting who were kind of willing to give the benefit of the doubt.
Listening.
Yeah, listening to what they're saying. And another benefit of this these sorts of events are that alongside the sort of the main event of this Q&A in this discussion, there were stalls for different council services that you could go and find out a bit more about, whether that be the adult education services or whatever it was. So I think Medway Council certainly feels that they're a worthwhile investment. And, you know, it's a school hall on a Wednesday evening. I think it's a worthwhile investment, Nathan.
Yeah. Well, there was a Monday night in a church and the hustings. And I suppose it takes a bit of an effort to get out when Coronation Street's all in to go and listen to four guys up on a stage talking about sort of things that they've got little control over. But it was a moderate turnout. But having said that, last year, just before the general election campaign, Katie Lamb, who was fighting the new Weald of Kent seat, packed out an even bigger church, and there were a couple, maybe even 300 people there. So it does, on occasions, excite a lot of interest. But on this occasion, it was a good debate, and I think the sort of 24, 25 people who actually went along from the public probably actually quite enjoyed it and found it to be a good exercise. Nikki?
I'd like to see more of these things streamed, live streamed and then recorded and made available online. You say that there are numbers that go along. When people are genuinely interested in something, they will make the effort to make that, turn themselves out and miss Coronation Street and turn up and listen. But there's a lot of people, you know, that we're busy and we've got other things going on in our lives. And I would like the opportunity to be able to sit down in my own time and look at it afterwards, maybe submit questions beforehand that might be raised by the panel. If you're talking about the Medway live event, something like that that could happen. And you're talking about ease of access. If you want to engage people, you've got to make it as easy as possible. Yeah. And by putting it on online, hopefully you're engaging the younger generation, the older generation as well. They're getting more tech savvy. They don't want to be going out of an evening. If they can view it, you know, on their laptop at home, on their little iPad, then they'll do it. And I think it's important not just only to hear the policies. I mean, I vote not only on the policies that I agree with, but also about a person's character. Do I trust that person? Do I feel that I can trust them to represent me and represent the views that I've got? And I like to see people in action as well. So I think recording it, live streaming it on things like YouTube, can it be that difficult? It must be simple.
I agree. It should be done that way. But funny enough, what you said about it, sort of getting a feel for the characters, well, there's a lady sitting behind me. I won't say what she said about one of the panellists, but she certainly made up her mind. What have you done?
And they're good fun to go to. I recommend everyone give it a try at some point, but they're definitely worth more as blood sport than they are as like a barometer of public opinion. Because like I say, sure, normal people don't go to hustings freely, especially around election time. The audiences are absolutely stacked with political party members who are, you know, represent something like 1.5% of the UK population. So everything that's discussed and the tone of the discussion is almost always reflective of the interests and concerns of the politically engaged more broadly, not of the general public. But nonetheless, I mean, around general election time, at least in my experience, you get more members of the public who actually want to make up their mind and hear what the candidates have to say. But I think Nikki's right, is that the most important thing about it is what it tells you about the candidates, because there's a lot of candidates, especially around the general election, where maybe if you only saw their social media feed, you wouldn't know that much about them. But you go along to a hustings and you can see whether they actually know what they're talking about, whether they can think on their feet and they can, you know, discuss things with the public and discuss things with people who they disagree with, or if they're basically just sent down from somewhere or other and just repeating party lines. And there's, you know, you see really, truly frightful performances from potential candidates at hustings. It's good that, you know, the public should see if a politician can barely answer a question that they're not prepared for by the public. You know, people should know that that's the kind of person they might be voting for. So I think they're mainly good to keep politicians on their toes, and there should definitely be more of that kind of thing more frequently, not just at election time.
Okay, folks, that's your love for this week. Thanks to Rob, Nikki and Dan for their contributions. And don't forget to keep an eye on KentOnline.com/politics for the latest news from around the county. And you can also sign up to our politics briefing newsletter by visiting KentOnline.co.uk/newsletters. And don't miss KMTV's politics show every Friday at 5 p.m. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Kent Politics Podcast. Don't forget to check out stories throughout the week on the politics page of Kent Online. And you can watch the Kent Politics Show on KMTV every Friday at 5 p.m. or on demand at kmtv.co.uk.
This has been an I Am Listening original podcast. For more information, head over to our website, iam-listening.co.uk.